All right, let's do this. Welcome to Inside Flicks. I'm your host, Mike. And like always, I'm here with Rich and Raymond. This episode, we're going to give our individual list of the best films of 2019. We are a little late. We should have done this a month ago. But we are going to do it now. And it's actually a good time because it's been a week after the Oscars. And actually, you know, before we proceed, let me ask you a question, fellas. What were your thoughts on the Oscars? What was some of the biggest moments of the night? Let's start with you, Raymond.
It was a good show. It got a little slow in the middle, like every year, because of, you know, the shorts and the, you know, stuff no one really cares about. But I mean, yeah, I mean, Parasite won Best Picture. I mean, that's a historical win. I mean, we all wanted it to happen, and I don't think any of us thought it would happen. Well, maybe you did, Mike.
Well, I thought it had a really good chance. I have to be a realist here, but I, you know, 1917 had the momentum, but I really thought Parasite had a really good chance, and it did. I mean, it's what basically swept the Oscars. Rich, your biggest moments of the night of the Oscars?
Yeah, definitely Bong Joon-ho's acceptance speeches and mm-hmm. Parasite winning altogether. I mean, other than that, the actors' wins were pretty much expected. Joaquin and Laura Dern was expected, and Renee, all four of them were.
All the main acting categories were kind of
expected.
Yeah, yeah. If it wasn't for Bong Joon-ho's wins, I think it would have been a boring night. Although I guess Eminem's performance was pretty exciting. I guess I don't know. It was weird. Oh, yeah. It was weird seeing him there. For ratings or something. I know that
he earned the right to sell out.
I guess he didn't perform at the night of his nomination.
Yeah, his win.
He won the Oscar for 8 Mile, and I guess they invited him back. It was something else. It was weird. There was a lot of weird performances, and
it was good to see Shia LaBeouf there with Zach.
Yeah, that was a heartwarming moment to see Shia LaBeouf and his co-star in the Peanut Butter Falcon. Zach, I believe his name.
Gotson.
And
I guess the Academy originally asked Shia to do a presentation, and he said he'll only do it if he brings Zach with him. So. It was a great move on Shia.
Yeah. I mean, they have become good friends from what I've read after doing that movie. They become like, I think they even are roommates at one time, or maybe they still are. But yeah, they become really good friends. You know, what's so cool about Bong Joon-ho's wins is that he was the most excited. The most
gracious.
He was the most gracious. He was excited to be there. And it's great to see him like kind of... you could see him like living his childhood dreams at that very moment, at that night.
Yeah, and saluting Martin Scorsese also was great.
Yeah, his salute to Martin Scorsese.
He was the only person with a good speech for all each time.
Yeah,
everyone else's speech was pretty
basic.
I wouldn't say basic. Pretty just went off.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, Joaquin went off a little bit, and Renee Zellweger. I mean, I think she's still talking right now. She's talking about saluting the heroes and the firefighters. I go, oh, I didn't realize that Judy was a firefighter movie. But Joaquin was like, he was talking about the cows. You know, I don't know. It went off for the rails a little bit there. I guess those moments is what makes the Oscars a little exciting. Final thoughts on the Oscars?
It still needs to be edited down. I mean, gotta get rid of some of the categories.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, bring back a host.
You think so? You think that will help?
Well, I mean, it's tradition. I mean, get back to tradition and let's just edit out these ones that people sign off for.
I want to add one thing about the Oscars. I do agree with Rich. They need to bring back a host. But specifically because every time they had a presenter on, like it was some type of comedian, and they all felt flat. Like all the humor that the presenters did this year was just atrocious, and it made the ceremony, I think, difficult to watch at times.
You mean the jokes? All the jokes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everyone did bits.
Yeah.
And most of the bits were like making fun of the Academy and stuff.
All right, enough Oscar talk. Let's get down to our top 10 lists. Let's begin with honorable mentions. Five films. We're going to just pick our five films that didn't make the top 10. Let's start with Rich. What's your honorable mentions?
All of them or just one?
Let's go all five right away.
Okay. Peanut Butter Falcon. That was one that barely missed. Also, The Lighthouse.
Oh,
barely missed. Wow. Yeah. Pain and Glory, which I recently saw and was fantastic. And I really didn't expect it to be so good. I mean, it was another subtitle film that I wasn't looking forward to seeing, but it was fantastic.
Antonio Banderas,
yeah.
Spanish film.
The Irishman, barely missed. And Dolomite Is My Name.
Oh, okay.
Eddie Murphy's comeback. Fantastic movie still.
All right. I'll quickly read off my five that didn't make my cut. Wild Rose, a great character-driven drama that I loved, but it didn't make my list. Another one, Ford versus Ferrari. This is a great studio movie. Great performances by Matt Damon and Christian Bale, but as right now, it didn't make my list. Like Richard said, Irishman. It's a great epic from Martin Scorsese, but
it was no Goodfellas. It was Casino. Even I mean,
yeah. If I had to compare those two films, this was my least favorite of that unofficial Martin Scorsese's gangster trilogy.
But the acting was superb.
Yeah, especially Joe Pesci. Mm-hmm. Like Rich said, Peanut Butter Falcon, and I also will throw in Honey Boy. Two great films from Shia LaBeouf. Two great performances by him. His probably career best. Again, it wasn't enough to make my list. It was close, but the last one, Marriage Story. Great emotional film. Great performances by Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson. It's just I couldn't really relate to the characters as much as some other films, but you can't deny it, the performances in that film, and the writing was pretty decent. It's just the characters I found a little ego driven and narcissistic, and I just couldn't relate to that as much. It's not that I don't hate any of these movies. It just didn't make my list. Let's go with Raymond, your five films that didn't make the cut.
Okay. My five movies are Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh.
Marriage Story, Pain and Glory, The Irishman, and Honey Boy. All great movies. Marriage Story, actually, love the movie, but my grade actually dropped for that movie since we reviewed it. I think I originally gave it an A. I'm more like an A- with that movie now. Still a great movie. And The Irishman, incredible film. But, you know, if I'm being honest, it's probably my third favorite Scorsese movie from this decade. I like Wolf of Wall Street and Silence more, mm-hmm. personally.
Okay. So let's get down to it, to our top 10 list. How you want to do this? You want to do it individually?
Let's do it one by one. Everybody.
Okay.
Let's start with our 10.
Rich, start with your number 10.
All right. I'm going to crush your souls right now. My number 10, Richard Jewell. Yes. This movie.
Okay.
Rocked my world,
yeah,
man.
You liked it. You liked it. Yeah.
I liked it. I lived that era. So. It just brought it back to life for me, and it was a great Clint Eastwood movie. I can't deny it, and the performances were great. I mean, I'm still listening to Kenny Rogers in my head right now.
All right, Raymond, you're number 10.
Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I think it's a movie I think I could easily climb up this list out of all the films I've seen this year. It's a really incredible film, one of the best acted movies I've seen all year, and it's got an extremely powerful ending. It's one of the most affecting romances I've seen all decade. Great movie.
Okay. My number 10 is one of the best rom-coms in recent memory. It's one of the great sleeper hits of the 2019. It has great performances by Randall Park and Ali Wong, and a hilarious cameo by Keanu Reeves as himself. My number 10, Always Be My Maybe.
All right.
This is the Netflix rom-com. You know, look, this is a personal choice for me because, let me get serious here. Last year, one of my best friends from my teenage years passed away. And after his funeral, I was looking through Netflix and I go, I don't want to see anything dark. I don't want to see like a drama. I want to check out this comedy. And this was like the recent release. And I go, let me check this out. And it turned out to be the perfect film. It was like, okay. It was funny. It was sweet. And it was about reuniting with your old friends from childhood. And it was something that I just went through, you know, at the funeral. I was talking to people who I haven't even talked to or seen in 15 years. So it was like the perfect film at that time. And it's, you know, it was like the perfect remedy. So number 10, Always Be My Maybe. And check it out on Netflix right now. All right. Let's go to number 9. Rich, you're number 9.
Well, speaking of funerals, The Farewell. this is a performance that is galore everywhere. I mean, this was a great direction from Lulu Wang, and it just was good. I mean, really good.
Yeah, great ensemble cast there.
Mm-hmm. Awkwafina was robbed.
Yeah, she should have gotten nominated for Best Actress for sure. Raymond, you're number 9.
My number 9, in my opinion, is the best comedy of the year. It was the feel-good movie of the year, and in my opinion, the best movie about movies this year, and that's Dolomite Is My Name.
Oh.
We did a review on it. I still love it, you know, just as much. It's a great movie. Yeah, that's my number 9.
And a great return of Eddie Murphy doing his thing. It was a fun movie. It didn't make my list, didn't even make my honorable mentions, but I really love that film too. My number 9 is a movie that right away I knew it was going to take me on a bizarre psychological ride. And it was one of the most gorgeous cinematography I ever seen in the film in recent years, and probably the best looking film in all year. And it transported me into a world I found fascinating and frightening. My number 9 pick, The Lighthouse. And it, you know, it's from rising visionary filmmaker Robert Eggers. And this is a bold two-person chamber drama that I could easily have been like pretentious, like too pretentious, but it's not, thank God. And it's a strikingly original film shot in glorious black and white. And it features like outstanding performances by William Dafoe and Robert Pattinson. And it's this great movie about madness and isolation and how isolation can quickly turn into aggression. And it's like this old vintage seafaring fairy tale. And it's a great movie. Hmm. All right, let's get to number 8. Rich.
This is something I totally didn't expect. And I was shocked by it that I really, you know, went to see it in, I hate subtitles, Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Oh, wow. I haven't seen this movie yet.
That's your loss. Mm-hmm.
What were some of the things you responded to in this movie that made you?
Yeah. I mean, the story, it was actually the story that, mm-hmm. I don't want to ruin it for you because you haven't seen it, but it's really riveting. I mean, it is like I totally didn't expect it. I mean, I thought this was going to be another, you know, lame.
like a French art house kind of.
Yeah.
Would you agree, Raymond? Because you also picked this on your top 10.
Yeah, this is a great movie. It's a very different movie than Call Me by Your Name, but it does have, I think, some similarities. They're kind of like people. I don't want to give them too much away. Anyways.
All right,
they do have a lot of similarities, though. It's just this is a superior film.
Okay, all right, Raymond, you're number eight.
Number eight. Oh, okay. The Farewell.
Okay.
It's a great movie. We reviewed it earlier. It's one of the most human films that's come out all year, and one of the most American films to come out all year. Even though it's, you know, a lot of it's in Mandarin, most of it.
Yeah.
It's a movie that deserved more recognition at the Academy Awards this year. Definitely, it was definitely snubbed for screenplay.
And also direction. I personally love her direction of the film, Lula Wang, and screenplay as well. You want to say anything more about Farewell, Raymond?
No. I mean, we reviewed it earlier.
Okay. My number eight. My number eight is a movie that I loved for its heartfelt immigrant story, for its story of a boy trying to find his own path through the music of Bruce Springsteen. My number eight is Blinded by the Light. Okay. Look, I know this movie is, and I know you guys don't particularly, you like the movie, right? What's your thoughts on Blinded by the Light?
I like Richard Jewell a whole lot more.
All right, take it easy, pal.
I like Blinded by the Light more than Richard Jewell.
All right, so I know that you have problems with it. And look, I agree. This movie is very melodramatic, and it follows a lot of the same beats that you would find in a typical coming-of-age film. But, you know, it worked for me. And that immigrant story about the Pakistani English teenagers struggling to fit both at school and at home is something that I could relate to. I think a lot of people could relate to. The musical aspects of the film can be cheesy at times. I agree.
Yeah, that's what...
Repetitive.
But it's not enough for me to override what I loved about the film. And mainly it's the boy's relationship with his father. And, it's from the director of Ben and Like Beckham. And I think this is her best work since then. I think it's better than Ben and Like Beckham. And so it's a fun movie. And not a lot of people talked about this movie. It kind of came and went. And I hope people find it. I loved it. Number eight, Blinded by the Light. All right, let's go to number seven, Rich.
All right. Uncut Gems.
Mm.
Yeah, Adam Sandler was another one robbed at the Oscars.
Definitely.
And Safdie Brothers. Wow. I really didn't expect this to be so good. I mean, I thought it was going to be a typical,
New York thriller.
Yeah. But it was not. And it was really, really good. It was fantastic.
All right. Raymond, you're number seven.
My number seven is, I think, a movie you liked a lot, Mike. It's one of the best war films to come out in a very, very long time. Sam Mendes' war epic in 1917. A movie that really makes you connect with these soldiers. Makes you feel like you're right there with these guys. I think it's a really great war film. I really
1917.
Yes, 1917. We reviewed it earlier. Great film. My number seven. Yes.
I don't think it's a bad movie. I just it didn't make my list. My number seven is a movie that was a complete surprise. I didn't expect this. It came out of nowhere. I was flipping through Netflix one day. And this came up, and I heard about it before. I saw the trailer, and I said to myself, I'm going to give it 10 minutes. And if it doesn't entertain me, I'm going to just turn it off. And boy, I was entertained from the get-go. This is a great, wonderful, bizarre, French animated film. My number seven, I Lost My Body. This is about a pizza delivery boy who falls in love with a young librarian. And the twist here, it's told in flashback, and it's told from the perspective of the young man's sliced off hand. So it's bizarre. It's weird, but it's also touching and sweet, but it's just weird. It, basically, what happens, this boy has his hand gets sliced off at one point in his life. And it starts off we see this severed hand. It starts off with in the medical lab, and he escapes the hand escapes the medical lab. And then when we see it run across Paris, and it's trying to relocate its body. And all this time it goes into flashbacks and memories of the body, this mm-hmm. young boy. And it tells this kind of sweet love story of him having this encounter with this young girl. And I would describe it as it like director Michel Gondry, you know, the director of Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind. It's like if he directed a Studio Ghibli film.
Mm-hmm.
It's like okay. that. And I think it's one of the best animated films I've seen in a long time. So number 7, I Lost My Body, currently streaming on Netflix. Check it out. All right, Rich, you're number 6.
This was my number one spot for the longest time, and I couldn't knock it off the top 10. All right, mm-hmm. So sue me. this is nothing but entertainment, pure entertainment value.
Okay.
Avengers Endgame.
Oh.
Okay. I mean this was the pinnacle of the Marvel Studios. I mean, this was it. I mean, this is the mountain that they had to climb, and they climbed it. And
it's certainly rewatchable stuff here. We can rewatch it all the time, yeah.
I have. And it's fantastic, and it's great for the fans. That makes
All right. Raymond, you're number 6.
My number 6 is a movie that both of you guys loved. It's a great movie with the cinematography has the composition that brings me back to like horror films like Stanley Kubrick's Shining. It has shades of the religious aspects of Alejandro Jodorowsky, The Holy Mountain. A great, great film. Ari Aster's masterpiece, Midsommar.
Oh,
man.
Yeah, this was a difficult. Like, me and Richie, we had a difficult
time. We reviewed it. Yeah, you can check it out if you haven't heard it.
We had a difficult time watching this movie. Yeah, it's a divisive film. I mean, it's either you love it or you hate it, kind of. I know you were, like you were saying in the review, you love this movie.
And my score for the movie has gone up since then, actually.
Wow. No, man.
What did you give it? I don't remember. Like,
I think I gave it an A-. I'm probably like an A with it now.
All right. My number 6 is very similar, I think. It's very similar because it's a movie about love. It's a movie about lost. It's a movie about passion. It's a movie about four sisters. My number 6, Little Women. Look, I went into this movie not convinced that I would not connect to this story about 19th century sisters. I mean, but you know, I was wrong. I mean, writer director Greta Gerwig did something really smart here. She bypassed the typical coming of age premise by really focusing on the sisters as adults. So the movie is really about reflection and coming to terms with adult responsibilities. And how those adult responsibilities can collide with childhood ambitions, and forcing one to compromise on those dreams. So, despite the title, the movie is about grown-ups. It's about grown women. And if this was about bratty little children, I don't think I would have loved it as much as I do now. So, number 6, Little Women.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Rich, you're number 5.
Okay, 1917. It's the war film that from this year. And Sam Mendes did a good job. George MacKay and Dean Charles Chapman, they were good soldiers. I mean, Roger Deakins shot the hell out of it.
Yeah, deserves the Oscar. I have problems with the film, but no problems with the cinematography whatsoever.
Right, and I don't think it deserved the special effects award, but... but by the end, the very end, I was really shocked that it was that Sam Mendes had that much into this. And if you haven't seen it, it's really based on his life. His great grandfather.
Yeah. Oh, it was a great grandfather. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Raymond, you're number five.
My number five is another movie that you guys loved. A great movie. One of the great artistic films of the year. Todd Phillips' Joker. if Parasite didn't win Best Picture, this is the movie that deserved to win Best Picture.
In your eyes.
No, in everyone's eyes.
All right, my number five movie is about family. It's about the contrast between Western and Eastern traditions. It's about the immigrant experience, and it's about the struggles of integrating into a culture that you have adopted. And it's also the struggles of returning to a culture that now seems foreign to you. My number five, The Farewell. Like you guys said, you know, it's a beautiful movie. And what I liked about this is that it's a multi-layered film. On the surface, it's a dysfunctional family dramedy. But it's also a heartfelt immigrant story, American immigrant story. And it's also this bittersweet wedding comedy, you know, or a wedding or a family reunion comedy. And it's all kind of wrapped up in a existential argument over how one should spend the last days of their lives. And I think that's what makes the film so refreshing and so profound. Because when was the last time a film asked you, you know, if you were diagnosed with a terminal illness, do you want to know? Do you want to live do you want to live the rest of your life in total ignorance? And I think that's a great premise, or that's a great idea, that you, when you watch this movie and you come out of it, you start talking about this. It's a conversation starter. So it's a good movie, and you know, like Lulu Wang deserves all the credit here. It's a personal film for her, and it feels honest, and it's a genuine, and it doesn't, you know, what's great, it doesn't feel manipulative, and it's not exploitive. And this was a good movie. This is a great movie. My number five.
Nine was a great acting piece. Also, she was
grandmother. Yeah, my number five. The Farewell. All right, we're getting down to it. Rich, you're number four.
Marriage Story. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Adam Driver. I mean, every time I remember this film, he stands out. I mean, I liked him. I actually did like him more than Joaquin. But, Ray Liotta deserves it more than Laura Dern. And it was good to see Scarlett Johansson in this film also. And it was good to see Merritt Weaver. I thought she was awesome. And also really good to see Alan Alda bring in another performance after suffering from Parkinson's.
Oh, yeah.
And you could see it. And this is another...
It's a great cast. Yeah, it's a fantastic
cast. And Noah Baumbach... directed well and written even better.
Yeah. Raymond, you're number four.
Number four is, that wacky Adam Sandler and the Safdie brothers, Uncut Gems. Uncut Gems, yeah, it's a great movie. It's one of the best films of the year. I saw it again recently before it left theaters, and I just, you know, appreciate it a lot more. You know, it's a great film that's just builds tension, you know, as keeps building tension as it progresses. And the Safdies have pretty much created their own kind of little subgenre in the thriller, a little sub thriller genre. And it's great. I love it.
Yeah. I mean,
I can't wait to see what they do next.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I love that film too. It is, you know, and you could tell that it was influenced by the gritty New York films of the 70s. And it does what memorable movies do. And that is transport you into a world that you haven't seen before. And like right away when that movie starts, you're plopped into the world of the New York Diamond District. And you meet these specific characters who inhabit this dark corner of the city. And what's great about it is like it's this part of the city that feels hidden, yet it's hidden in plain view. So we kind of get these backstage passes to this you know, other world, you know, and Adam Sandler gives like his best performances of his career. Yeah, so Uncut Gems is also my number four. And this is the first time I've seen a Zaffy Brothers film. And it's a quite an introduction to their work. Benny and Josh Zaffy are absolutely a part of this new generation of young, rising, great filmmakers. And they're keeping that long tradition of balls out New York storytelling that's gritty and dirty. And what I like most about the movie is that the Zaffy brothers are not judging anyone here. They're not judging the characters. I think the brothers have deep fondness for their characters, and especially Adam Sandler's character, Howard Ratner, who is without a question a slime ball and a cheat and a degenerate gambler. But it's something I really connected to, because I think I know these people a little bit personally. It doesn't feel foreign to me that these characters, they're not slime balls in my eyes. They're kind of endearing in a lot of ways, although they make terrible decisions. All right, Rich, you're number three.
Okay, this is a film that it went up the charts for me, and it just being released in Blu-ray, I think this past week. This is a film that I liked in the beginning, but then I just kept on watching it again recently, and it just revved it up. And it's Ford versus Ferrari. Mm. And James Mangold is getting better and coming off of Logan.
Yeah, very reliable director now.
Yeah.
Very consistent. Yeah.
Christian Bale, Matt Damon did terrific jobs. And Katrina Balfe from The Outlander, I thought she was fantastic, and she should have been nominated for this role, I think. Noah Jupe, Honey Boy himself, another good performance. But
you know. Yeah, like I said, I think it's going to have this rewatchable thing, and it's going to have this second life at home, and I think people, it's like, you know, what's good about it, you could say to your parents, you could say to your kids, you could say to any member of your family, hey, let's watch this movie, it's good. I think they would enjoy it. You can't do that with Midsummer or something, with this movie you can. You could, this is like a great, this is what studio films used to do. And it didn't make my list, but I totally agree with you that it is a good movie. Raymond, your third film.
My third film is I Lost My Body.
Oh wow!
It's a fantastic movie. It's an extremely lyrical movie. You pretty much laid it out, Mike. But it's a very beautiful movie. Really, that kind of all comes together in an extremely satisfying way by the end. Your character really goes through a big arc throughout the entire movie, and you see it all through a hand, all through the perspective of a hand, told in flashbacks.
Yeah, it's a total original film. A total original film.
Yeah, it comes together in such a passionate way. It's a one of a kind. I might even see it going up my list over time. Like I could see myself giving this like a 10 out of 10 one day. I mean, it's a pretty perfect movie.
Wow. I agree. I love that movie too. It made my list. Rich, you didn't see this movie yet.
Well, actually I started watching it, but this week, but I had to shut it off, but I'm definitely going to rewatch it again.
All right, my number 3 is an enormously overlooked film. This is a historical revenge thriller that doesn't shy away from the disturbing historical accuracies of racism, oppression, and cruelty. This is a brutal, brutal film. But it's not shocking for its shock value. In fact, at the end of this movie, there's a glimmer of hope, or at least I saw this glimmer of hope and solidarity that completely overwhelmed me with emotions. And this is a stunning movie about an ugly, revolting time in Australia's history. My number 3 film is The Nightingale. I really love this movie. This is a remarkable film, and I was surprised that I'm actually surprised that it even got made, because people nowadays get extremely awkward when seeing depictions of extreme racism and savage misogyny and these disgusting class oppressions. But these are the facts of history, and I think it's more detrimental if we are forced to sugarcoat or whitewash the darkest chapters of history. And I have to applaud writer-director Jennifer Kent here for not watering down the horrors and the brutality and the injustice of this era. The movie's set in the backdrop of the Australian colonization of the early 1800s. And it's basically about this disgusting occupation of white English soldiers who have taken over the island of Tasmania from the black Aboriginal people. Look, I could describe the movie forever, but I think it deals with these type of hard issues with adult sensibilities, and it's a great film. It's a tremendously moving film. I found, and
I saw it on Hulu, and
it's currently streaming on Hulu, and I it's my number three pick, and I recommend to check it out.
Yeah, I like revenge flicks, and that's a good one.
All right, Rich, before we get to the number two pick, let's do a recap. Quickly, do your say your movies from 10 to 3.
The Fantabulous Emancipation of Richard Jewell, The Farewell, Portrait of a Lady on Fire, Uncut Gems, Avengers Endgame, 1917, Marriage Story, and Ford versus Ferrari.
All right, Raymond. Let's do a recap for you. Let's. Can you run down your top 10 from 10 to number 3?
Yeah. Portrait of a Lady on Fire, number 10. Number 9, Dolomite is My Name. Number 8, The Farewell. Number 7, 1917. Number 6, Midsommar. 5, Joker. 4, Uncut Gems. And 3, I Lost My Body.
All right. My recap is number 10, Always Be My Maybe. Number 9, The Lighthouse. Number 8, Blinded by the Light. Number 7, I Lost My Body. Number 6, Little Women. Number 5, The Farewell. Number 4, Uncut Gems. Number 3, The Nightingale. All right, we're all caught up. Now let's get down to it. Rich, your number 2 pick.
Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Sure, it's not his best film, but damn, it's damn good. And it's Brad Pitt's Oscar-winning film. He deserved it. It's a milestone for Hollywood. And as far as Hollywood pictures go, I mean, making films, Hollywood making nostalgia films, mm-hmm.
Yeah, they say that it's Tarantino's love letter to 70s Hollywood. I would say it's his love letter to 70s television. Because I didn't realize when, and I love this movie too. This is not my number two pick also. What I didn't realize after watching this movie is that I didn't realize how much Tarantino was influenced by television shows of that era and the television writings of that era. And so watching this movie, I got to see a different side of Tarantino that I haven't seen before. And it's also his comedy. It's a comedy. And what I liked about it, the movie demonstrates Tarantino's devotion and appreciation for those unsung character actors of the 70s. This is, in many ways, a beautiful written thank you note to Michael Parks, to Robert Forster, to Dick Miller, to Fred Williamson, Pam Grier, and John Saxton, and other actors of that ilk. I know it's flawed. I know it has some pacing problems, script problems. It's a flawed movie, but it's also the most enjoyable movie experience I had all year. I love
and it. And also Clue Gulager, who has...
That's right. Right. Yeah. So it's a great entertaining film. I loved it. And so in the words of Bong Joon-ho, Quentin, I love you. All right. Raymond, your number two pick.
My number two pick is The Lighthouse. Great descent into madness film. It's a very simple movie. Really, two guys have to do some work at a lighthouse and have to spend some time together, an extended time together, and things go wrong. They lose their food and just find a bunch of alcohol, and things keep getting worse and worse. I love the movie. I mean, the cinematography is very beautiful. It's very reminiscent of a bygone era of filmmaking, bygone era of cinema. And which I think in today, because especially the what he's doing with the movie and kind of the subject matter and kind of how psychological the movie is, it makes the movie really feel from like not just like a different era of cinema, but like if he makes it almost feel like from a different like dimension or something. Like that. Yeah. It's great. I love the movie. William Dafoe was completely snubbed. Robert Eggers should have also probably been nominated for Best Director. Incredible movie.
Yeah, I agree. It made my list not as high as yours, but it is a fantastic movie. And all right, let's get down to it. Number one, I'm assuming we have the same pick, but I don't know. Let's see.
You're wrong.
Oh, interesting. Let's see. Rich, what's your number one?
Parasite, of course. It was Bong Joon-ho's masterpiece.
Raymond, you're number one.
Number one is obviously Six Underground. No, it's Parasite, of course.
Yeah, my number one is Parasite. I mean, it's no surprise. I mean, this is...
How do you do better than Memories of Murder? I mean, Memories of Murder is fantastic.
Bong Joon's earlier film, yes. Which I thought it was his best work until this movie came out. When I went to watching this movie for the first time, it had a lot of hype surrounding it. Mm-hmm. And it was already on the top of people's best year list. And so, frankly, the film lived up to the hype. So I truly consider it as one of the best films in recent years. Probably the past decade. One of the best films of the past decade. And it's a true masterpiece.
It's a true masterpiece. And I think it's really great that this movie got the best picture win. Because it kind of makes... Parasite feels like the type of movie, you know, kind of like that you would find out about from a friend or something like that. You'd watch it, you think this is a masterpiece, and then you'd look it up and you'd see it got no love, nobody acknowledged it in awards wise, but it finally got acknowledged.
Yeah.
And it's a big it's I feel like it stands for like a lot of great Korean films that, you know, should have gotten attention over the years.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. Rich?
Hopefully Kang Ho-sung also gets more recognition also. I mean, he was great also in
Snowpiercer,
right. And I thought he was going to do more American films, you know, just, you know, cameos here and there, whatever, mm-hmm. basically. And hopefully the young ones, Woo Sik Choi and Soo Deun Park, I thought they're fantastic. I mean, they're the
siblings.
Young siblings. And I hope they get some work overseas also.
Yeah. For those, you know, for those who haven't seen the film yet, don't let the foreign aspect of the movie fool you. This is not like a super self-important art house import that, you know, that all the snooty critics go, you know, baba for, you know, or you know, go crazy for. This is a mainstream movie. This mm-hmm. is a bold and highly entertaining film. This is the type of movies that Hollywood used to make before they went superhero crazy. And actually, you scratched that. This is something that Hollywood wished it could have made back in the day. The film is really like deals with modern day issues, social and class issues, but the structure and the way it's told is greatly digestible. And in many ways, this is a Ken Loach film, but disguised as a genre bending thrill ride. It is a fantastic film, and I hope more American filmmakers get influenced by this film and kind of try to really push the limits of, you know, of this type of genre, this type of dealing with modern issues, and you know, be more daring with their decisions. So yeah, it's the best movie of the year, right?
I hope Adam McKay doesn't ruin it
with the TV series.
But so Bong Joon-ho said that
yeah, he's producing it. Yeah.
No, but they're using like he originally had a much larger story in mind.
Right.
He couldn't fit it all into 2 hours.
Oh, we'll see.
So hopefully it's good.
We'll see. All right, that concludes this episode. Our picks for the best films of 2019. I have to say that 2019 was an incredible year for film. I compare 2019 to 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, obviously 2019 was stacked with incredible films, which I think compared to the other films of this decade, the past decade, crushed them, crushed those guys, those other films. It's just a fantastic, it was just a fantastic year. Amazing year. All right, Rich, tell the people how they can find us.
The people can find us on Apple, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and find us on Spotify and iHeartRadio. Or you could just go to www.insideflix.com.
All right. All right. That was this episode. And we'll be back with another one. I think we're going to do another list, maybe the best of the decade. Again, we're a little, we should have done this a long time ago. We're catching up. So thank you for listening. This is Inside Flicks. Bye-bye.